Strangely enough, in the scriptures we know a lot about Solomon, but we don't actually know how old he was when he eventually came to the throne. We know that at the beginning of 1 Kings that Solomon is not yet a man, hasn't yet reached his adulthood, and so he can't make any decisions on his own. We know from one passage that he was the 10th of King David's sons, out of either 17 or 19 sons, depending on which passage you read. So he certainly wasn't the firstborn. He doesn't, of natural right, have the authority to take on the throne. And so when we get to this passage, where it's clear that the divine will is that Solomon should be the one to take over the mantle of his father David, to become the new king, to bring together this disparate people to continue the incredible work that David had begun in forming this kingdom, in forming a people, hopefully like David, who was after God's own heart. So Solomon is just feeling a bit vulnerable. David had done an incredible work. David had begun to bring together all the different tribes. He'd established a national capital there in Jerusalem. At that stage, Jerusalem was probably just a tiny little village. Didn't have any real claim or anything of worth or might, and yet David established it. And David knew that he wanted to build a temple, to build a place where the worship of God would be undertaken. But the Lord said to David, no, it won't be you. That will fall to your son. And so as Solomon begins to come into his own, knowing this incredible heritage that has been given to him, these incredible shoes that he has to find a way to fill, you know, how vulnerable must he have felt? I don't know why, but it's in verse 7, but it's not actually in verse 7 according to the lectionary. But Solomon says, you know, I don't even know when to go in or when to come out. Sounds a bit like most congregations today with the new translation of the liturgy, that we're still confused, we're still kind of caught up in the midst of all these changes. And he's feeling frustrated, he's feeling vulnerable, he just doesn't know. And in the midst of this, the Lord addresses him. What do you want me to give you? Ask anything, what will it be? Have you ever pondered that question in your own heart? If the Lord said to you, what do you want me to give you? What would your answer be? Have you ever thought about what you want your life to be? What do you want? It's a question you actually find with some frequency in the scriptures. Jesus will ask a cripple or a blind man, what do you want me to do for you? He seems to want us to articulate, to say what it is that we want, to name the thing that is our heart's desire, to say to him, this is what I want my life to be marked by. This is what I want my life to be remembered. This is my heart's desire. What is yours? What is that desire that burns within you? Well, maybe your life is just too busy. Maybe your life is just so caught up with so many other things that you don't have the opportunity to actually ponder, what is my heart's desire? What do I want? What do I long for? Above everything else, what is that treasure for me that is hidden in the field? What is that pearl of great price that I will get rid of everything else if only I can obtain that? If only I can possess that one thing that is necessary, what would it be? Solomon's answer, of course, is for a wise and discerning heart. He has this expression that he wants to know the way that he should go. He wants to know how to rule this kingdom. And like most men, he exaggerates quite extraordinary. He says that this kingdom is beyond counting. There are too many people. That's such a great and massive empire that I couldn't possibly even begin to see what is at the heart. Who are all these people? What are their desires? He's feeling weighed down by all of this. And yet the Lord is pleased with his request. The Lord is grateful that he didn't ask for some of the other things that he might have asked for. He didn't ask for long life. He didn't ask for success against his enemies. He didn't ask for incredible power or for amazing wealth, most of which Solomon, of course, ends up with. He does become one of the most wealthy people, probably, in human history. He certainly fashions an even greater empire than King David had managed to bring together. But of course, he's also famous for this wisdom that he was able to exercise, at least at the beginning of his ministry. Later on, he allowed his heart to become somewhat divided. And like many a good man, it was various women that helped to lead him astray and to let his heart drift into other things. But here we have the key to what the Christian life can be about. The heart that is focused. The heart that is captive to the Lord. This is what the Lord asks of every single one of us. What is your desire? What is your longing? What would you ask of the Lord when he makes this offer before you? When we look at the lives of the saints, what we see is so often in some of the most incredible and powerful minds. For example, at the end of the life of St. Augustine, when he's pondering deeply upon the mystery of the Trinity, and the Lord appears to him and says, you know, Augustine, with all of these things that you have managed, what else do you want? And Augustine, like St. Thomas Aquinas, many years later, when Thomas is praying before the cross, both of them answer in exactly the same way. Only you, Lord. My only desire is for you. Nothing else but you. St. John of the Cross, he summarizes all of his other teaching, all of the other things that he spends so many pages describing. And he says, if you want to know in a nutshell what the Christian life is about, how you can obtain this union and this perfection with the Lord, there's this one thing you need to know. And he writes about it in the first book of the Ascent of Mount Carmel in chapter 13, when he says, have an habitual desire to imitate Christ in all that you do by bringing your life into conformity with his. What is at the heart of the Christian life is our desires. What is at the heart of our life is that desire to be like Jesus, to make ourselves like him. John gets it exactly right. It's the habit of our lives that matters, and the habit of our desires. Make the habit of your life the desire to imitate Christ in all that you do by bringing your life into conformity with his. That's the pearl of great price. That's the treasure that is hidden in the field. That is the one thing that is necessary for us to desire him and him alone. So let's make that commitment in our Eucharist today. Let's make the habit of our lives, beginning today, to desire him. Not to achieve it, not to say, yes, I've done this, I've managed it, but to make the desire, that habitual desire to imitate Christ in all that we do.